talked about it? Have you talked about it? And communication in every single regard has to be one of the most important things that people can do in the whole wide world. I think we all would agree. It is so, so vital to not just our lives as individuals, but the life of the church. It just cannot be overestimated in any way or underestimated in any way, shape or form. And the passage we're going to be looking at tonight here in Galatians chapter 2, there's a theme in it about communication, because the truth is that communication actually between people in the main a lot of the time is relatively poor. It falls down, it breaks down, things between fall down beneath the cracks, people don't feel able to say things for all manner of reasons, opportunities sometimes, or and so on and so forth. And it's such a crucial matter, and if we fail to communicate, there are always consequences. Things build up. And communication, if it's done properly and well, can be an absolute godsend, an absolute blessing. It can open the doors of heaven, can't it, really? And truth and life, forgiveness and grace and all these manner of things can come by it. I want to draw your attention again to this passage that we've been reading and looking in chapter 2 from verse 1. And I was particularly struck by the line there in verse 2, a bit further down the verse towards the end, when Paul talks about the fear that he was entertaining at a certain point that he'd run his race in vain. And I think in that verse there's a whole world of experience just to be plumbed out of that little verse, because if you're like me and you're like Paul, it seems that occasionally life in all its fullness and all its diversity and complexity and relationships and everything that's involved can sort of creep up on a body, and as it does so, you can find yourself one day standing there thinking to yourself and have a crisis of confidence, and you can be asking yourself this question: am I just wasting my time? Is this just a waste of time? And that question comes to all manner of people at all sorts of junctures for all sorts of different reasons. And it's a scary thought. It's a rather frightening thought, I think, if you'd be open and honest enough to confess that such thoughts have ever occurred to you at any juncture in your lives. It's quite a frightening thought. And clearly here in verse 2, Paul is confessing to a fear. You know, remember fear? Remember what fear really is? It's frightening, isn't it? Do you remember that feeling of being afraid? He's confessing that at a certain point he found himself feeling genuinely afraid. Fear crept up on him. And when that happens and you have a crisis of confidence and you wonder whether you've missed the road, you wondered whether you kind of, the temptation, the grass is always greener on the other side, as they say, you look around and you see how other people are living their lives. You can see the way that they're working out their decisions. They can, and you look at the alternatives, and suddenly paraded before you is perhaps the life that you could be living, or the things that you could be doing, or perhaps should be doing and aren't. And then the question goes, is there still a chance? Could I still do them? Is it too late? If I move now, if I made the right decisions, could I still access real life at that moment when, for whatever reason, you lose confidence to such an extent that you are not sure that the life that you're living right now is the life you should be living, you're not doing the things that you should be doing, and you are in the grip of doubt. What a thought to think that maybe it's all been for nothing. It's all been a total waste of time. This is pointless. It's been pointless. That's a really searching and quite frightening thought, isn't it? And maybe people, as soon as that thought begins to present itself, they take some medicative action to try and blot out those thoughts because it's a frightening thought. But you'd be amazed how many people in the course of their lives go through some form of personal crisis or crisis of confidence. And a lot of people who you wouldn't even think are experiencing those sort of things, because we are the masters of disguise. The masters of disguise are experiencing it, have experienced it, and so on and so forth. It's a natural thing in a way. If I could just refer, I've referred to him before a couple of times in previous months for one thing and another. Freud. Let me just talk about Freud for a minute. He used to lie people down on a couch and ask them just to speak, just to talk. And he wouldn't tell them what to talk about, wouldn't ask them any questions, wouldn't encourage them when they started speaking. He wouldn't nod and look benignly or smile or go, that's interesting, or nothing at all, just to talk. And the truth was that as people started to talk, this rising tide of anxiety would just, am I saying the right things? Is what I'm saying interesting enough? Am I pleasing you? Is this offending you? So many anxieties and thoughts started to crowd in that most people found it very hard to talk for very long at all. Or if they did, they just got into a sort of a jabber where it wasn't really engaged. They weren't really talking out of their heart at all. And that the truth is, when people say that public speaking is one of the high stress, do you know it's a high stress? You wouldn't think it. It's just a bloke standing up opening his mouth, but they say it's high stress. Because of this thing of projecting yourself out and not knowing what the responses are. And after a while, this question of confidence, am I on track? Is this important? Is this working? Is it worthwhile? All those sort of things. And each of you, as you live your lives, in one sense, that's what you're doing. You're projecting out into the world, aren't you? You're going out. You're making decisions. And it can happen that you hit a point where you just wonder, have I just missed it here somewhere? And am I lost? Am I lost? There it is in verse 2, this underlying self-doubt that started to apparently grip Paul, this fear that he might be running, because running is a very active verb, isn't it? He's not just pootling along, he's not just putting his toe in the water. He's thrown his life into something. These are the major commitments. And this major commitment he's made, he's suddenly thinking, have I just got it all wrong? Have I got it all wrong? But what does he do? What does he do? He goes in verse 2 and he says in verse 2, I went in response to revelation and set before them the gospel I preached amongst the Gentiles. He goes down and he lays it all out, bit by bit, in every part, in all its details. He goes over it. And sometimes when you hit a moment of crisis or doubt, the only thing you can do is just stop, sit down, go through the whole process. How did I get here? Piece by piece, step by step, decision by decision, and go back over your workings and find out if you are still on course or not. And that is actually the exercise we see all undertaking, to address these fears, to address these doubts, to go over the whole thing bit by bit. This doesn't happen so much anymore because we have sat-nav. But in the olden days, about 3 weeks ago, before sat-nav, you'd drive along in a car and somebody would give you directions to their house, and you'd never been to that part of the world before, and you could get yourself to Birmingham, and you could get yourself to Edgbaston, or you could get yourself to an area, and then there was the final last bit of the journey. There's always a little bit of detail, and it was always a piece of paper in my case, return left, turn right, there's a roundabout and all this sort of thing. And there'd be a point where you'd suddenly be thinking, you're going down this road, I think I followed all the instructions, I think I'm must be very nearly there, but the road just seems a little bit longer than you thought or expected it might was going to be. And you suddenly think to yourself, Was the lamppost that I turned out the lamppost? Was this that or was it not? Have I gone down the wrong? Have I got? And usually, isn't it, unless I'm the only one, you're probably about 200 yards from the spot. You're about to arrive. And just as you're about to arrive, suddenly this creeping doubt comes up that maybe you've taken the wrong turning. And the only thing you can do is go back over the instructions, pull over, sit down, I turn left, I'll follow it all, and just go all the way back through and rebuild it up from the base and check. And he does that, doesn't he? He goes back over the gospel because this is the path to eternal life. This is no joke. This is so, so important. It is so, so serious. If he's missed this road, it is so important. And he sits down and he goes back over the whole thing again. It's amazing, isn't it? Here's the Apostle Paul suddenly having a doubt cast over the gospel he preaches and everything he's invested into. And if he has moments of doubt, then maybe you won't be too surprised if you have one day, or have had one, or are in the midst of one tonight. What caused this crisis in his heart? What started it? Most of us expect, as Christians, as you share Christ with others, that you will experience a measure of hostility from people outside. I assume you all just basically take that for granted, that there may be occasions where people's hostility towards God is projected onto you and you will find resistance or opposition from unbelievers and so on and so forth. And some people, you walk up to some people, 6 foot, tattoos, leather jacket, I suppose you sort of assume that, you know, if you try and share Christ, you may get a hostile response. Often you're wrong, but you assume that at least there's a reasonable possibility. What's so hard and what has been so undermining for Paul in this experience is that the hostility, the attack, the problem hasn't come from the outside. It's come from within. False brothers. You know, that's where it says that people have crept in amongst them. People that he trusted, people he assumed the best of. And aren't these the worst of the wounds? From the last place you expect, from the people you think are safe, and out of that apparent safe place comes something that fundamentally questions and undermines who you are, what you believe, and it can be very, very hard to handle. What we read about the event, that's why I want you to particularly read in verse 11 about how Peter, when he came to Antioch, opposed him face to face. And then in the bit earlier on, he says that he did not give in to them for a moment. Now, sometimes, even when this attack comes from very near you, rather than, you know, far away like that, you can handle it very well. Paul, in my judgment here, handled it. He said, I didn't give way to them for a moment. How many of us give way, you know, for too long? It takes us a while to gather ourselves. But he was right there, saw what was going on, confronted the situation straight away. He realized that the gospel was under attack. And he confronted it there and then. And he didn't take any reference from the fact that it happened to be Peter, who apparently was one of the people in the group, however important Peter might be. But later, we can see how deeply shaken he was by the experience. Whiplash, I think, is probably the analogy, isn't it? You unfortunately have the unpleasant... Have you, any of you had the unpleasant experience of being in a car prang and stuff like that? I know you have, Janet. You hit the car, the adrenaline kicks in, you come out of the car, how are you? I'm fine. You know, I just feel a bit shaken. You exchange all your details. Everything's pretty normal. You're talking normally. You have a cup of tea. 2 days, 3 days, 5 days later, suddenly it's like, oh, my whole body is in agony. It's just like, and it just comes back like a recoil and smacks you. And I think we're seeing something like that. In the moment, he deals with it extremely well. But what we find is there's some residual. It's affected him deeply. And it's left in him this... It's affected his confidence, deeply affected his confidence. And what I suppose what I'm trying to say is, Paul is wounded. He's been wounded by his friends. He's left afraid that actually he's just wasting his time. He didn't stop believing. He didn't stop believing, but believing became hard. Do you know the difference between those two experiences? With believing and when believing is hard? He's in that place, isn't he? And what he has to do, he realizes he had to do, he has to step aside. He has to rethink. He's got to regroup himself. And that's what people have to do, isn't it? And get the reassurance he needs. And if that means building it back up from the ground, then that is what he's prepared to do. And that's not a weakness. It's a strength that he was prepared to doing it. Because, you know, brushing it under the carpet and just carrying on and saying everything's fine and okay is not acceptable, clearly. Because God's people have got God's work to do. What did he do? He goes to find somebody to talk to. And he goes to find somebody he can talk to privately. And that's quite important, isn't it? Because if you're like me, going to talk to somebody and opening up about personal things can be a little daunting, to say the least. And so to know that you can have a private situation, a relatively safe situation to do that, is an extremely important facility, isn't it? And oftentimes, if you are not just talking about talking to a friend, and you're not just talking to somebody you know, but somebody who you may not know very well at all. In fact, the person you've got to go and talk to could be, as Paul had to go and talk to people who were some pretty substantial people he ended up going to talk to. The equivalent of having letters after their names. These were the people that when you preach the gospel, the stories you were telling people about what Jesus did, these were the people who populated those stories. I mean, this was Peter who walked on the water, you know. Impressive. People who you could be impressed by. And it's quite unnerving, isn't it, to go and talk to people who are pretty impressive or appear to be pretty impressive. So it's important to obviously find a private place to go and do that. That's what's demonstrated here. And also to make sure that the sort of people you're talking to are the sort of people who are likely to be trustworthy as well. Sadly, people speak to all manner of people. They go and, I heard somebody the other day, they had occult events going on in their house, a new Christian, and there were occult events going on in their home. Now, you know, maybe I'm stupid here, but they called up a medium to help them. Now, to me, that didn't seem like a very good idea. That didn't seem like a very good idea. It wasn't a very good idea. If you've got a health problem, if you've got a gastric, you'd like to go and see a gastric specialist, wouldn't you? If you've got a heart problem, you want to go and see a heart specialist. You want to make sure you're going to see somebody who actually has a reasonable chance of being able to help you and is qualified and can listen and go through the things and know something. He wants to talk about the gospel. Going to talk to Peter and James and the others seems a pretty good place to go, doesn't it? Privately to go over his doubts and concerns about the gospel. And again, you know, Facebook, you know I'm a bit of a Facebook head, okay? You know that. But sometimes I see people on Facebook, they blurt, they hang out their washing on Facebook. Stuff that, you know, I'm not just talking about people being a bit inappropriate. I'm talking about sort of people having family domestic arguments online. Instead of going to that person's house and sitting down and talk to them, they have arguments online in front of everybody. I mean, that is not going to help. It's not going to help. An appropriate setting. He goes for an appropriate setting with appropriate people, leaders, people of good reputation. Because the truth is that if you are carrying something, it is actually quite risky to share it with somebody, because if they can't handle what you're sharing, it could actually make the situation worse. Because the truth is, let's face it as well, Paul had invested body and soul into his work. And if he found out that in fact he was running in vain and he was wasting his time, and these people confirmed his fears, that was going to be pretty devastating, wasn't it? Pretty devastating. So there are risks involved. But if you're running in vain, running is fun, running is good. It's a nice thing to get up to speed and to be running. But if you find out that you're running in the wrong direction, it is definitely time to stop and turn around and go back and start running in the other direction once you find out where you're supposed to be going. Because it may be painful to find out that your fears are founded, but at least that gives you power to do something about it. I mean, if it's the concern about the gospel, whether you really have believed properly and you really are holding on to your faith, you want to make absolutely sure that you really, really have, and confirm these things so that you can, and if you've made a mistake or you've got it wrong, that you can get it straightened out, because this is so important. And of course, it applies to other areas in life as well. But carrying on just with these nagging doubts is just no way to live your life. And he took this very bold step. As it turns out, he had nothing to worry about at all. Nothing to worry about at all. And of course, that is a deeply, deeply encouraging thing, isn't it? When you've got a fear, you sit down and you go over it in detail with appropriate people, and you come away and you find out, actually, do you know, everything is just fine. And on the consequence of that, can you imagine how he went on his way? Oh, happy, happy, at peace, and relieved, and re-energized, and released, just because he decided to stop and talk about it, to talk, open up and talk about it. What it turned out was that these people he went to talk to, big names though they might have been, and he apparently was a practical unknown coming in late, no mention in the Gospels. All these people populated the Gospels, but he found out they were just people just like him. They were just the same. They believed the same things. They're flesh and blood. They failed. They made their mistakes. And in the end, we can see how they shook hands together. And that's just such a human thing, isn't it? The right hand of fellowship has rather become a rather formal thing. But it's actually just a very human thing, isn't it? They just shook hands, man to man. They just recognized and acknowledged each other. And the consequence of that was deeply encouraging, clearly, for everybody concerned. Finally, I think from verse 11, why I wanted to raise verse 11, there's another twist on this, is that the person who actually had caused the offence was the person that he actually had to go and speak to. Peter was the person who down there at Antioch had undermined the gospel by his actions and forced him to act and to do as he had. And time went by and it became clear that he had to go and talk to the very man, not in the heat of the moment as he had before, but quietly, peacefully, and deal with the situation openly and frankly in a Christian way. And the truth is that James was the reason that the people had come down to Antioch in the first place. These were people from his church, under his charge. Somehow he'd let these people, with their warped view of the gospel, get out of hand and was going out and disturbing Christians in other places. James was partially responsible for the crisis that Paul was facing. Barnabas, his friend, who went up with him as his right-hand man, had been taken in by it all and been moved and so on. So the people he's with, none of them are perfect. And in fact, in some places, he is taking it back to the very people who have offended him. and undermined his confidence in such a way. And what's from the text here, the way that God continued to bless the work of Peter, you know, God will continue to bless the works of people even if they're not absolutely right with God. If they make mistakes and they're flawed, his grace still abounds, doesn't it? But there was an issue that needed resolving, and it was actually beginning to create a hold-up in the life of the church. And once it had got resolved, what happened? It benefited Paul, it benefited Peter, it benefited the whole church, and everything gets back on track because they talked about it, because they found the confidence to own it and talk about it in a good and appropriate way, and the consequences and the benefits were all there. Do you like going to talk to people who've hurt and offended you? Do you find that an easy thing to do, especially if that person is a person in authority, a pastor, a leader, a teacher, a husband, somebody, you know, a boss or a colleague, somebody with... It's difficult to find the confidence to do that, to say, look, you hurt me, and this is the consequences of what's been done, and I want to go over it with you, and I would like to resolve this and get through to a better place for your sake as well as for mine. And amongst Christians, you all know that this is the practice that we are called to pursue, isn't it? We're called to do this. We're called to live like this. And Paul is demonstrating it. Here, leaders have let down followers. It happens. But they talked about it, and it resulted in good. Finally, I want you to notice that he took Barnabas and Titus with him. Partly, I think he wanted to show Barnabas that the doubts that he'd had himself were unfounded too, to help him and encourage him, and to bring Titus along to demonstrate to others what a uncircumcised Christian looks like. Guess what? They're exactly the same as circumcised Christians. I'm sure that's part of it. But I think there's another part of it too. That these were his friends and his colleagues. And going to face somebody who you find perhaps could be intimidating or difficult to face, sometimes to go along with people who you are friends of yours and can support you, is obviously a very helpful and good thing to do. Because one thing is absolutely clear as I read this passage is that wrongs need righting. They need righting at an appropriate time, in an appropriate place. The Lord led him into this. He said, I had a revelation in response to a revelation. The Lord showed him this was the way and what he had to do. And he went and did it. And I know that God blesses it when people speak to each other and talk about it in a right way and at the right time and get resolution, especially, most importantly, when it touches on the gospel of Jesus Christ and eternal life, because this is the most important thing. Truth is, there are some things that are not that important and probably we can deal with and put to one side, truth be told. Some things are really important and need to be addressed, and surely this is the most important of them all. So I have nothing more to say except just to encourage you. If somebody's hurt and offended you in any way, shape or form, and I'm not speaking this out tonight because I'm aware or conscious that there's anything like this at all, but just because this is the passage of scripture that I've been reading this week as we've been leading up to tonight's service. But if there are things, then be encouraged to take good steps and deal with those things, and in there, if there aren't, rejoice. And if somebody comes to you as a little embassy wanting to put something right and receive them, it could be a real means of blessing and encouragement. And as well, I think lastly, the final application really is that if you ever feel unconfident about the gospel in some way, shape or form, or you're unsure or unclear about things and it's niggling away and eating at you, do just speak to somebody who you think reasonably comes to speak to me or anybody else who you feel can help you, to just go over it again and encourage you just to put all those things in perspective. Half the time, you're much righter than you know. But we do get undermined by this world, don't we? And many of you, I know, rub up against people who you love and trust in all sorts of human ways, but may be actually not on the same page when it comes to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that actually can have a very long-term unsettling effect. And so I do encourage you to just, you know, if needs be, just go back over it again and make sure you're on course. Most of the time you are. But it's very encouraging to know, isn't it, from time to time when it's called for. I'm going to leave that there and just invite you again just to sing with me this sung prayer, I suppose, this prayer that God would take our lives and let them be consecrated to the Lord. And when there are things that hold that up and need to be let go of or dealt with, obviously that's very, very important, isn't it? And we've got to, if we want our moments and our days to flow in ceaseless praise, sometimes we get bogged down. Fear, and restlessness and doubt, these things will not cause your life to flow in ceaseless praise. So we need to get these things dealt with. Let's